So we are holding on Kuftes Zayin Amud Aleph, fourth line. We learned yesterday that talking about the details of who yarshins who, and in particular, we talked about the fact that if a person dies and leaves behind a daughter and a granddaughter, a daughter of his son, then that granddaughter is going to be the one to yarshin, not his daughter, because the granddaughter stands in the place of her father. That was the argument that the Tzedukim had with the Chachamim, and eventually the Chachamim, specifically Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, disproved their argument, and the halacha was reestablished the way it should be, that that's how it is. The granddaughter inherits, the daughter doesn't. We said it, because she's from the father, she comes via her father. Yeah. Had it been, obviously, had it been a
grandmother.
So we said in that connection,
The father's line inherits first.
That's what we said, right? That's what we said. That was one of the basic rules we said in the Mishnah, right? So we mentioned in that connection the idea that we said that that even if the Nasi should be Yisrael says not like that, says that a daughter should inherit, that a daughter and a granddaughter should inherit equally, we don't listen to them because it's my Tzedukim. Because that would be following in the ways of the Tzedukim. Even if they don't mean to do it because of the Tzedukim, they mean it because of other reasons. Nevertheless, we're concerned. We don't want people to think that we are following the Tzedukim. So now we're going to talk about... No, because it could happen. Again, according to the Rashbam said yesterday that we're talking about two possibilities. One is that if the Nasi, for example, decides he makes the same kavachomer, that the Tzedukim did, and on that basis wants to say that the halacha should be like that. Fine, a kavachomer is a legitimate way of learning halacha. It can happen. No, you know what? I'll tell you. The Rambam actually writes an interesting thing. That if a based in Hagadol, if a Sanhedrin in any generation uses one of the Yud Gimel Midas, Shatar and Adreshes Behem, to learn that the halacha is a certain way, then fine, they're able to do that. And obviously, we're talking about they have smicha, they're the based in Hagadol, we're not talking about Stamma based in, but the full Sanhedrin, they can do that. If a later Sanhedrin decides that they don't like that limud, they understand that the Kavachomer can be schlugged up, or that the Hekish can be used for something else or whatever, then they can do that. No, so that's the point, in other words. So, for example, so if we have, our Mishnah had told us, again, on the basis of what Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai argued with the Tzedukim, that the father's line inherits ahead of the daughter's line, right? However, it could conceivably happen that a later Sanhedrin with the Nasi might fucking decide, you know what, that Kavachomer, that we said this yesterday, that they're confused, is compelling. We should take a follow that. We should take a establish that law like that. Ordinarily, we would say that's fine. In this case, we don't want to do it because my Zdukim. We said yesterday that Ashbam gave another explanation, that we're talking about somebody who wants to have only some of his heirs inherit him. And then we said,
It seems a weakness to say it's Master Zdukim, when in fact we proved that.
We may have proved it, but proof can always be undone. That's the point. Unless we have, if there's something, for example, which we know it's a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, fine, then that's it. No later Sanhedrin can overturn it. But if you have, for example, that one, a Sanhedrin of one generation has used a kavachomer, let's say, to learn the halacha in a certain way,
right,
and later on another based in another generation says, I can slug up that kavachomer, or they say, for example, that it's true you have a kavachomer, but against that I have a zera shava, which should say differently, then fine, we do that. And it's legitimate. When we say that one basin can't overturn a previous one, that's talking about Xeris, that's talking about Takonis, that's not talking about when they darshan, according to the Rambam anyway, that's not talking about when they darshan that the halacha is a certain way according to the Yud Gimel Midas. Any later basin can overturn a previous basin's decision in that regard. So if it weren't for the fact that it's Maisik Tzedukim, you would be able to do that. Anyway, we said yesterday Tosfos gave a different explanation, that we're not talking about where they want to change the halacha permanently on the basis of kavachomer or what have you. We're talking about, let's say they want to make a takana for whatever reason, as we're going to see now, that there was a time in history when they had reason to make such takana. So normally the Chachamim have a broad ability to make takanas, especially in dinim mamonis, because hefker based in hefker, but not in this case because it would be my tzedukim. So with that, let's get to our Gemara. Fourth line of Kuftes Zayin Amud Aleph. The background for these next couple of lines is the story of Pelegesh Begimel. If everybody over here is familiar with the story of Pelegesh Begimel, then I won't repeat it. If anybody needs a summary, if anybody needs a refresher, then let's do that. Briefly, what happened was you have a man and his Pilegesh pass through the city of Giva in Binyamin. They were overnight guests by somebody in town. During the night, all the people of the town, or many of the people of the town, come and surround the house and are trying to break down the door and take him and do terrible things to him, sort of like the story with Lois like Mises does.
Where was that?
This was in Giva in Binyamin. That's right, called Pilegesh for Giva. That Amban talks about in Parshas Vayera, that it was not Givonim, the city of Giva. It was a Jewish city.
It was the
Shevet Binyamin. Okay, that Amban explains, that Amban talks about in Parshas Vayera, how it wasn't exactly the same as the situation in Sdoim, because for one thing, there was the actual law of the land to do like that. Here it was stam a bunch of wild people. Whatever it was, anyway, the bottom line is that they ended up sending out the Pilegesh to them, and she ended up dying of the way they treated her. So everybody made a whole to-do about it. The other Shvatim were outraged. We've got to do something. Shevet Binyamin, you've got to do something. Shevet Binyamin, for whatever reason, didn't think they had to do anything about it. And so they had a civil war. All the other Shvatim fought against Binyamin. To make a long story short, most of Shevet Binyamin was wiped out. All that was left was 600 men and essentially no women.
These two were from another Shevet?
These two, yeah, the Levi and the Pilegesh were from another Shevet. They were originally from someplace in Har Ephraim. They were passing through on the way from Beit Lechem back to home. What? Pilegesh is a Pilegesh, a concubine, meaning she's not his full-fledged wife. There's two different opinions whether Pilegesh is there's Kiddushin but no Ksuba, or whether there's no Kiddushin and no Ksuba. Okay, anyway, whatever it is. We learned back in Gittin, the importance of a person has to be careful not to get too angry in his household, because the whole thing started out, the Levi was angry at his Pilegesh, and therefore she ran away, and had that not happened, then this whole story wouldn't have happened. Anyway, the bottom line is that, we said over there in Gittin that there's a fruit. He found a fly in his food, he found a hair, so whatever, the point is, but he got overly angry about it, and so she ran away, and then everything developed from there. Anyway, for our purposes, what's important is, A, most of Shevet Binyamin was wiped out, and B, the other Shvatim actually, in the course of that, they all got together and they made a cherem among the Jewish people. Nobody is allowed to marry off their daughter to anyone from Shevet Binyamin. Eventually, after the Civil War, there were only 600 men from Shevet Binyamin left. Tempers cooled down. Everybody realized, you know, a Shevet is about to go extinct, and we can't have that, as we learned yesterday. What are we going to do? To make a long story short, they found 400 wives for Bnei Binyamin from a city in Ebra Yadin, Yavish Gilad, who hadn't been there at the time of the Chayim. The other 200, they told them, go to Shiloh, where the girls are dancing in the vineyards over there, and grab girls from there and take them as wives. We will learn later on. We'll learn next week, says Hashem, that that's one of the reasons we celebrate Tu B'Av as a Yom Tov.
So they all married outside the Shiloh.
Right. Well, so 400 of them married these girls from Yavish Gilad, and the other 200 grabbed themselves wives from other Shvatim. The point was, so that way the Shevet can be reestablished. That way all 600 of these men have wives, and eventually they'll have children, and eventually the Shevet is rebuilt.
What about the women from the Shevet? They didn't have women in the Shevet?
They're pretty much all of them had been killed during the war. Every city that they found, they wiped out. So, yeah. So now, in that connection, the Pasuk says,
the only time it happened in Jewish history, that one Shevet almost wiped out
another one. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the Pasuk So the Pasuk says like this, Vayomru, the other Shvatim said, Yerushas Pleita leBinyamin, a Yerusha of the refugees from Binyamin, v'loyimach a shevet miYisrael, that a shevet should not be wiped out from among the Jewish people. Now, the simple meaning of it is they're saying something like, we want to make sure that at least these refugees, these remaining 600 men, should have a Yerusha, they should be able to take back over the nakla of their shevet, they should be able to marry and have children, etc. But, the total number of men killed in the various battles over there was 25,000 and some. How many women and children doesn't say. So what does this pasuk mean? Yerushas Pleita leBinyamin. So the Gemara is darshining it in another sense, that it means Omer Rabbi Yitzchok Dvei Rabami. Rabbi Yitzchok said in the yeshiva of Rabami, Melamed Shehisnim Al Shevet Binyamin Shleit Tirash Bas HaBeinim Ha'achin. It means that at that point in history, they made a takana regarding Shevet Binyamin. that a granddaughter should not yarshim together with the brothers, with her uncles, in other words. Meaning, in other words, like this. Normally, we said yesterday that if you have, a man dies, he leaves over one son and one, and he had two sons, but one of them died while he was alive. So one of those sons left a daughter. We said that daughter stands in the place of her father. Therefore, since you have the equivalent of two sons, and each of them is going to get half the property, each of them is going to get half the nachla, or even more if one of them is a bechor, whatever. Here, they made a tnai not to do that.
Against,
why is that? The reason is, that Rashbam says, because, let's think, most of Shevet Binyamin is wiped out. All you have left is 600 men against, and who did they marry? They married 400 women from Yavish Gilad and 200 from Benoist Gilad. So it comes out the entire Eretz Binyamin is divided up among only 600 families. Now, so meaning, in other words, so if you have a situation where a woman is in a position to inherit, and again, as we've talked about in previous blocks, if she marries a man from another Shevet, then that nachla is going to go to her husband or her son from another Shevet. So you're going to have a big chunk of the land of Binyamin is going to go to some other Shevet. We don't want to do that. So Mela, the Rashbam says, if you have, let's say, if the guy left only daughters, fine. I mean, you're not going to take away the nachla from his family entirely on the basis of that. Fine. You'll make sure that in that case that she'll have to marry within her Shevet. But if you have a situation like what we were just talking about, where a guy dies and leaves over and leaves over a granddaughter, where normally the granddaughter should have a share of the Yerusha, or even all of it, as the case may be, as we talked yesterday, they made a special takana in this case that she should not yarshin it. Because we don't want, we want to make sure at that period of time, at that point in time, that the nachla doesn't end up by some other shevet. It's going to be a big chunk of Eretz Binyamin. It would be 1/600th of the entire nachla of the shevet. So a couple of mepharshim ask that. The Marsha says the reason is because practically speaking, there aren't very many people available. Remember, there are only 600 men from Binyamin left over at this point. So if you're going to say that a girl in this situation. There were essentially no women left over from Binyamin. Maybe a couple, but basically none. The point is, though, no, these people are going to get married. They're going to have children. Some of those children are going to be daughters. Some of those sons are going to have daughters. It's still going to take generations before you have a large enough pool of eligible men from Binyamin. So if you're going to say that every time, so Mela, fine, a person leaves only daughters behind, fine, but less Breda, they're going to have to find a shidduch within their shevet. But to go to the extent that even the granddaughters are going to have to, that they didn't want to have to do. That they preferred to say, let him marry to other shvatim, and we'll prevent the nachla in that case from going to them and through them to their husbands or sons. By Takana.
That's what we said.
But again, at that time there weren't any Tzidukim. Tzidukim came around 1,000 years later, so we're not worried about that. That's why the Gemara is willing to say. Yeah. There's a different explanation that some of the Rishonim, such as the Rimi Gash, say that the other way around, the Takana was that if a girl marries into Shevet Binyamin, like these 400 girls from Yavish Gilad, or like the 200 girls from Benos Shiloh, that if they are in a position to yarshin, that they shouldn't yarshin from their families. Because again, then what would happen is the Yerusha would end up going to their husbands or their sons from Shevet Binyamin, and therefore Shevet Binyamin's portion is going to become even bigger. As it is, you have each person right now has 1/600th of the land of the Shevet, which is a very large piece of land. They didn't want to make it that each person is going to have even more than that, when in the other Shevet, you have thousands or tens of thousands of families, and everybody has a much smaller plot. So therefore, according to them, that was the takana over here, not for the benefit of Binyamin, the way that Rashbam is explaining it, but for the benefit of themselves, the other shvatim, that more nachla shouldn't end up going to Binyamin than needs to be. Okay. All right. Okay.
Could it be in rich land?
No, so they're entitled to make such a takana. And there are, by the way, the poskim talk about different. We said yesterday, for example, that according to Tosfos anyway, that the chachamim are able to make takanas on a temporary basis, at least, because, or even on a permanent basis, because hefker based in hefker, as long as it's not ma'aseh tzedukah. For example, one thing that comes up, there's a great deal of discussion beginning already from the times of the Gaonim and continuing among the Rishonim and Achronim about the question: if you have one of a person's children, Rahman al-Aslan, is a mumer, a mishrumah, Is he entitled, or Chassid Shalom, is he entitled to inherit?
We've discussed
this briefly before. We discussed it in connection with Yubim and Chalitza. We talked about it here and there. But one way of looking at it is they are entitled to take that Yerusha away from him, even though in principle, Yisrael after Shechati Yisrael, who he ought to be entitled to that Yerusha, but on the same basis as what we're saying over here, they're entitled to take it away from him.
And give it to
his other brothers or whatever. Give it to his other brothers, give it to his children if he has children who are Roy or whatever, yeah. And now a little agadah on the subject of leaving behind children. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Tol she'enim aniach bein liyosha. If somebody does not leave behind a son to yarshin him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu molei olav evra. The Eibishter is upset with him, is angry with him. Actually, the Rashbam brings from Ben Hanano an even stronger expression, soina yosha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Eibishter hates him. Now, how you talking? What do you mean? Is it a person's fault? So there's a lot of different things that Mephoshim talk about. This. Some of the Rishonim say that we are talking about a person who is not Oisik in Piri Yerubia. He doesn't bother getting married, even though he was able to. He doesn't try to have children. If he tried to, and never, he didn't have children. Of course, that's different. That's one explanation. Yeah. So that's one explanation, right? So there are some of the Rishonim, some of the Mephoshim focus on the word Liyosha, and they say, we're not just talking about whether you leave behind a biological son or not. We're talking about, did you leave behind a son to yarshin you? In other words, did you teach your son to go in the right way, that he deserves to yarshin you?
Yarshin, I mean your way.
Your way, yeah. So in other words, yeah. So in that sense, in other words, so that's another nuance in it, that's another explanation of it, right? That it doesn't mean a person, whether he leaves a biological son or not, it means whether he leaves behind a son that he trained in the right way. There's different other explanations also. For example, there's an explanation, I think, from the Torah Chaim that says cause and effect are the other way around. It's not because the person doesn't leave behind children, therefore the Eibishter is angry with it. It's the other way around. If the Eibishter is angry at a person, one way in which it may be shown is that he ends up not having children left behind. Then there's a verse that one of the Mephoshim says that it's not so much that Eibishter is angry at him as it's like he did something wrong, but think of it like this. We know it's important the person leaves behind a son will say Kaddish after him. And Kaddish helps bring Rachmanos on the Neshama. Yeah. And then Kaddish helps bring Rachmanos on the Neshama. So no son to say Kaddish, automatically what's left is Evra. And then, okay.
How can you say that? You know, the Rebbe didn't have children, that doesn't mean...
The Rebbe had Talmidim, that's the next thing. But, okay. Fine. Then there's yet another explanation. Then there are some of them. Of course, would say that Ben over here also means the Talmud, which you're going to see. The next thing is actually explicitly says the Talmud. But okay. There is also the Maharal says a vote on it like this. He says that when the Eibishter deals with a person on an individual level, it's more according to Midas Adin. When the Eibishter deals with the Jewish people, with the klal on a general level, it's more with Midas Harachim. Alderach, for example, like we say, that a minion, the Eibishter always listens to their tefillahs, where the yachid has to have special tefillahs, things of that nature. So therefore, the idea is a person doesn't leave behind ben liyosha means that he's not part of the cloud. He's like part of the prat, because he dies, and that's it. He's gone. He hasn't contributed to the cloud, because he doesn't have anybody left after him. So therefore, molei olav evra, so therefore, the Eibishter treats him in a more evra, in a more din-type fashion, rather than a rach. Type of fashion. Okay.
Now, let me ask you a question. Does that mean he has to have a son who's Shemeter Mitzvah? Could he consider having...
So it depends. I mean, it depends on the different explanations of the Yosha, right? I mean, on the one hand, if he leaves behind a son of any kind, I mean, fine. Lider, unfortunately, the child isn't observing Torah and Mitzvah, but first of all, he could always do Tshuva. Second of all, he could end up having children or descendants who will. On a different level, though, yeah, I mean, you know, on a different level, though, a father has a responsibility, a parent has a responsibility to make sure that their children go with Derech HaYosha. Okay. Now, where do we see this from?
Yeah.
They
don't have the full obligation.
Okay, you have to do what you can. How do we see that Molei Olav Evra? Ksiv Hocha Va'avartem Es Nachlose, because over here, in connection with the Dinim of Yerusha, the Pasuk uses the expression, you should pass over, you should remove the Nachla, where we said if he has no son, then you Va'avartem, then you pass along the Yerusha to the daughter. Ksiv Hasem, and you have a Pasuk elsewhere, you have a Pasuk in Tzfanya describing the punishment of the Rishayim, Yoim Evra HaYoim Ahu, that day is a day of Evra. So Vahavartem Evra, there's a relationship between the two words, so therefore that shows that when there's no son, then there's Vahavartem, there's a degree of error, there's a degree of Evra means anger, like we say in the Haggadah, Evra Vazam Vatara. Okay. Another drasha on in this connection. The pasuk says in Tilim, famous pasuk, Asherin chalifos lamoi v'lo yoru elikim, that the people who have no chalifos and they don't fear Hashem. So the simple meaning of Mepharshim on the pasuk, Rashi and the other Mepharshim explain that chalifos means like when a person passes away from the world, that the Rishayim don't think of the fact. Eventually they're going to pass away. They're going to have to give a din v'cheshbin in front of the Eishter, and they don't think about that. Therefore, v'lo yoru elikim. Here the Gemara is going to dash in the word chalifos in another sense. Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shoban Levi. Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shoban Levi argue what it means. Chalifos, then, we're going to understand Meloshin Chalifin, Meloshin a successor. So what is the successor? We say that, so in other words, we're understanding Hashem and Chalifos Lomo is somebody who has no successor. V'lo Yoru Elikim is not someone who fears Hashem. So Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shoban Levi, Chad Oma Kol She'en Raniach Bein, one says that it means that a person who doesn't leave behind a son, is, like we said in the previous drasha, Molei Olam Hevra, so therefore it shows a lack of Yiras Elikim. V'chadom HaKol She'en HaManiach Talmud. The other one says that it means somebody who does not leave behind a Talmud, that he didn't want to teach Torah to people who he was able to, and therefore that was wrong. But, yeah, okay. Now, which one said which? We have Rabbi Yechanan or we have Rabbi Shoban Levi. Which one said which? The son or the Talmud? Well, Tistayim, Rabbi Yechanan, to Amar Talmud, we should be able to conclude that Rabbi Yechanan must be the one who said that it's a Talmud, that if you don't leave behind a Talmud, then it shows that you're not a Yorei Elikim. It's a bad thing. As opposed to not leaving behind a son, according to Rabbi Yechanan, may not be such a bad thing. And how do we see that? To Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Dein Game Da Asira Bir, because we find Rabbi Yechanan used to tell people when he was Menachem Avol them, he would tell them, this is the bone of my 10th son. Meaning, the Gemara tells us in Brachos that Rabbi Yochanan had 10 sons, and all of them passed away while he was alive. So he held on to one. Now he held on to one bone. Now the Rashbam explains over here when we say a bone, it means a tooth. Because if it was a regular bone, it would be metame. Rabbi Yochanan is not going to carry around something that's going to make him and potentially other people tame. No, but even Yisraelim in those times were careful about the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. They still had, it seems from a Gemara in Chagiga, it comes out that in those times they still had the ashes from the Parah Adruma left over from the second base of Mikdash. This is about 200-300 years after the Churban or so. They still had Eifah Parah Adruma. They would still use it in order to be Tahar. So therefore, they would still try as much as possible to be Tahar. So how is he carrying around something that's Matameh, if it's a piece of bone? So the Rashbam says that it was a tooth. Because a tooth that's separated from the body is not metame, unlike any other bone that's separated from the full body, it's still metame. But because a tooth is not one of those things that stays with a person throughout their lives. A person is born with no teeth. They grow later on. The baby teeth fall out. Permanent teeth come in. So we learn from a drasha and a pasuk. I don't remember what the drasha is exactly. That only things that are part of a person's body from beginning to end are metame. When they're detached from the body, that is, when they're still attached to the body, they are metame. If you were to touch, if you were to open up a mess's mouth and touch his teeth, you would become tame. But if the tooth is removed from the mess, then it's not metame.
So when, if you touch his shirt, you might become metame.
Yeah, okay, it's a lesser degree of trauma. Let's not get into that. But a regular bone, yes. A regular bone that's separated from the body would be the tamid. Would be the tamid. But because it stays with him the whole life. But a tooth, not. A fingernail, not. A hair, not. Yeah.
Some do and some don't.
Basically, the bones that a person has, I mean, you have bones fused together during your lifetime, but they're all there to begin with. They may be there as cartilage to begin with, but they're there. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
I was wondering about that. Why would he carry a bone?
So the point was to be Menachem Avol people. This way, when he's being Menachem Avol people, he would tell them, the Ramash teaches it out. He says, he would tell them, look what happened to me. I lost all 10 of my children, but I still accepted the Eivishter's judgment. I still was able to go on with life. So you also should be able to do that. Anyway, so the Rashbam says that it was a tooth. There's other Mepharshim who say that it was a small piece of bone, a piece smaller than a sa'ira, the size of a barley grain, because that's the minimum to be metame. The Ritva brings a different explanation. The Ritva says the word bir over here, which we translate as son, can also be meloshen havra, like the sudas havra that you have after a levaya. So therefore, at that sudas havra, typically you have meat. He kept one bone from the meat that was served at the Soda Sabra for his last son, and he would show it to people and tell them that I can sympathize with what you're going through, but still a person has to go on with life. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan is not going to be saying on himself that he's not a Yorei Elikim. So therefore, if he didn't leave behind any children, is mashma that he must be the one who says, between him and Rabbi Shurban Levi, he must be the one who's saying that if you don't leave behind a Talmud, then it shows you're not a Yorei Elikim. But not leave behind a son, that doesn't show anything about your madriga one way or the other. Because he himself didn't have, and he used to tell people that I don't have children anymore. And yet we
No. Hey,
we've learned about Rabbi Yochanan. I don't think we talked about there about his children. No.
It must have been a Rashi.
Maybe. In Brach has to talk about it, yeah. Could be.
Okay, you didn't talk about it, but right. I remember learning it in that.
Okay.
When Reish Lakish was dead, he was so sad, even though all the children died, he died from not having Reish Lakish.
I'll tell you, actually, I saw a vote about that just today from Chaim Shmulevitz, the famous Mira Mashkiach, who said, Taka, you see, that not having a Talmud, not leaving behind a Talmud, like Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shurban Lakish, is Taka worse than not leaving behind a son, because we see Rabbi Yochanan was able to be consoled over the loss of his children, but he was inconsolable over the loss of Reish Lakish. Yeah.
Was his only Talmud?
No, not his only one, but he was his main Talmud. We looked over there in the Gemara that Rabbi Yehu was like, it was more like a chover to him. Yeah. So, onward. So we see that Rabbi Yochanan evidently holds that a person who doesn't leave behind children, it's not such a bad thing. It doesn't show that he's not a Yorei Elikim.
As opposed to a Talmud.
Okay, well then, Tisayim de Rabbi Yochanan on a Talmud. Good. Well, then that seems to prove that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who said that if you don't leave behind a Talmud, that's what the pasuk means by Sharon Khalifa's woman. Well, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Talmud, Rabbi Shurban Levi Amar Ben. In that case, by elimination, then Rabbi Shurban Levi must be the one who said that if you don't leave behind a son, then it shows that there's a problem. Problem with that is, Rabbi Shurban Levi, but we find that Rabbi Shurban Levi would not go to a shiva house to pay a shiva call. Beit Tamya means the Rashbam explains that the word Tamya means dead people. So therefore, Beit Tamya means the house, that means the house of the men. No, not Melosh and Tomei, necessarily. Tamya literally means bones, but the Rashbam brings from a Mishnah that mentions bias mole Tamya, meaning that it's full of masons. So we see the word Tamya can mean masons.
What? It could be a cemetery.
Yeah, no, but Beit Tamya doesn't mean a cemetery. It means over here a shiva house, the house of the Ovel, to be Menachem Ovel. Rabbeinu Gershom, by the way, has a different elaborate explanation how Tamya can mean Ovel, because you can substitute letters for each other using various ciphers. We're all familiar with Afash, so there's a half dozen others that the Chachamim use in various places. So there's one, for example, called Afach, where you put the Aleph with Tes, because they both add up to 10, Beis with Ches, Gimel with Zion, etc., and you do the same thing with the tens and the hundreds. So according to that, for example, Tes of Tamya comes out to Aleph of Ovel. Similarly with all the other ones, each of them, you can use one of these ciphers, and thus you can come out to Tamya, you can get the word Ovel. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Shurban Levi would not go to such a place because he didn't want to be mevatel from learning Torah. Ella lebei man deshachiv b'leibani. He would only go to be Menachem Avol, somebody who died without any children, because dichtiv, as the pasuk says, b'chu b'chay l'holich, cry for the one who goes. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav l'holich b'lei ben zachar. And Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, it means it's talking about somebody who leaves the world without leaving behind a ben zachar. Without leaving behind a son, or how goes the Bach changes it to like Bonin without children. The point is, so then Rabbi Shurban Levi felt fine. That's worth taking time from learning to be Menachem Avol, such a person, because he's taka completely dead. He left behind nobody after him. But now Rabbi Shurban Levi is not going to be going to such a place if he considers that the mess was a Rosha, that he was not a Yorei Elikim for the fact that he didn't have children. So you see, evidently it can't be that Rabbi Shurban Levi is the one who says that Asher and Chalifas Lomer Vela Yoru Elikim refers to somebody who died without children. Because other than that, he wouldn't go to such a shiva house. Ella, no. Okay, so we have to change our mind. Rabbi Shurban Levi, who do a Talmud? Fine, we have to say Rabbi Shurban Levi is the one who says that if a person does not leave behind a Talmud, then it shows there's a problem. Okay, well then, we'll meet Rabbi Shurban Levi, who do a Talmud, Rabbi Yechanan Amma Ben. Fine, then in that case, again, by elimination, we have to say that it's the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan must be the one who said that, talking about you didn't leave behind a son. Problem with that is, Kasha de Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan, that don't you have a contradiction between the two things of Rabbi Yochanan? That on the one hand, he's saying on the face of it that if you don't leave behind a son, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Molei Olam Evra, but on the other hand, he's taking around bone or tooth or whatever of his son and showing everybody and saying, Dein Gamad Asir Rav here, this is the bone from my 10th son. So what is it? The answer is, like Kasha, Hodidei Hodirabe. Many said that he told people, look for my example. I buried 10 children and I still have and I still was able to overcome it, etc. That he held like Rabbi Shimon Levi. That's the day. That's his own opinion. Hadar Rabbe, what he quoted before when he said that Kol She'enim Aniach Bein, that was actually a continuation of what he said before in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that Kol She'enim Aniach Bein, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moleh Olam Ever. That's Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai holds that way. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that. So Rabbi Yochanan is not arguing with Rabbi Shimon Levi. Taka agrees with him that the main problem is you don't leave behind a Talmud. But he was quoting in Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai's name. You should know there's another explanation that's talking about that somebody didn't leave behind a son. He himself didn't agree with it, which is why he would tell people, Dein Gan Madasi Rabbi.
Not everybody can have
a Talmud. If you're capable of it, but besides, everybody is capable in some way, right? How does the famous expression go? That even if all you know is Aleph, teach somebody else Aleph. Yeah, exactly. We're Lubavitchers. We know. We grow up with the concept of Mitzrayim, and the first mitzvah in the Torah is Pruhu, that one year has to make another year. So yes,
Pruhu in Torah.
Yeah. Okay. Simon Hadad Oni V'Chacham. So now we're going to have a simon for three things that Rabbi Pinchas ben Chama said. The first one is going to connect with what we said before about a person leaving or not leaving behind a son.
Is there a halacha to decide between Talmid and Ben?
No, I mean, it's not a question of halacha. It's a gadza. Yeah. I'll tell you, actually, besides for the question of what's the tame from a mess and not that comes out of this Gemara, by the way, that we just talked about, there is actually a different thing. We know there's a mitzvah of kvura. We know there's a mitzvah to bury a person. According to the explanation, according to the Rashbam's explanation, that what he had was a tooth from his 10th son, fine, it could have been a baby tooth that fell out and it doesn't need to be buried with it. According to the Ritva's explanation, that it was a bone from the Surah Sagra, of course not, there's no mitzvah to bury that either. But according to the explanation that it was taka bone from the child, but it was less than a sa'ura in size, how you talk him that he's keeping it with him and not burying it. So they bring from a missing going, who explains on that Gemara in Brachas what happened Nebuch to the 10th child is he fell into a boiling pot and all that was left of him afterwards was bone. So in that case, some of the Achronim want to say, in that case, there's no mitzvah of kvura in the first place. You should bury whatever's left out of covered a mess. But still, there's no particular mitzvah of it, and therefore it objects to PvP, because that would only apply if the body is basically still intact.
You only bury a body that's intact?
No, but the primary mitzvah of kvura is when the body is basically intact. If it's mostly come apart, like what we're saying over here, then there wouldn't need to be, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan was able to. What do you mean? How would you do that? You still have a mitzvah to bury whatever you can, but if there's a piece left behind, then you're not obligated to. Yeah, so Rabbi Yochanan was able to hold on to it. By the way, Rabbi Nissim Goyen also says, by the way, which seems to not fit so well with our Gemara over here, because Rabbi Nissim Goyen also says that Rabbi Yochanan eventually did have another son. After the 10 passed away, he eventually did have a son, Rabbi Masna. He does that, we set to learn in Babel. He doesn't say whether that's the same Rabbi Masna that we have in many places in Shas or the Talmud of Shmuel, but
Do we know why he sent him?
We don't know. The Gemara talks about it over there in Brachas in connection with the whole concept of Yisurin Shal Ava, that sometimes the tzaddik suffers Yisurin just in order to bring him closer to the Eishet. All right. So, Simon Hadad Oni B'Chofa. So now we're going to have three things that Pinchas Ben Chama says, where the first one of them connects with what we were saying before, and the other two, since we mentioned one vote from him, then we mentioned another two.
Can you talk a little about Pinchas Ben Chama?
I don't know anything about him.
Besides,
Dorosh Pinchas Ben Chama. Maybe that's where the Gemara puts all of the three very blocks together over here, because we don't have them at all.
Is this a new name?
No, it could be. I don't know if it's elsewhere in Shas. I don't know. We haven't seen it. That doesn't mean anything. Okay. My Dichtiv, what does it mean? It says like this in the Pasuk. Now, the background of this Pasuk is as follows. In Sefer Shmuel, it tells us how David sent his general Yoav to fight against Edom, and he wiped most of them out. We learned back in the second Perek how Yoav killed all the males, and afterwards David tells him, he didn't kill the women also, and he says, I learned Kal V'Chomer from Amalek, because he misunderstood Timchat Zohar Amalek rather than Zechar. We had that whole discussion over there. Anyway, so most of Edom... Yeah, because his Rebbe hadn't been careful when he told him. Yeah, we talked about it back in the Sylvia. Yeah, we talked about that then. Okay, so, anyway, the bottom...
That in,
we had that in the second paragraph, on the second.
No, but which book?
which book it's in Shmuel, it's Sefer Shmuel. We also have in Tillim, by the way, by Yoshev in capital Samach, by Yoshev Yoyah, by Yaakov Edom Begay Melach, that Yoyah went, returned, and then and struck Edom in the Valley of Salt. They had a battle over there. Shmuel also, all up at 18,000 were killed. Anyway, so most of the Edom, what? Because they killed, no, that's you think of Moab. Moab, the Moabim killed David's parents and most of his brothers. No, the Edomim is the Edomim were allied with the Aramim. They were all dangerous enemies of the Jewish people.
The Moabim killed David's parents.
Yeah, I know, but because they were Rishonim. Okay, let's not get into that. That's a side thing. Okay. So the positive. So moving along in Sefer Melachim, the Torah tells us how Shlomo HaMelech eventually, towards the end of his life, was not doing the right thing. He's allowing his wives to worship Avodah Zarah, and therefore the Eibishter caused that he starts having various troubles at various corners of his kingdom.
Which wife?
Shlomo HaMelech. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and he allowed them to worship Avodah Zarah. He didn't prevent them from setting up mizbeches and whatnot for Avodah Zarah, so therefore he started having problems in his kingship. One of them is over here, the pasuk that we're going to quote over here. So the pasuk tells us like this. After Yoav wiped out most of them, right, one member of the royal family, a guy by the name of Hadad, got away. He and his people wind up in Mitzrayim. They settle in over there. He marries a sister of the queen. He's having a grand old time over there. Until now we have the pasuk that we're going to quote. Yeah. The pasuk says this. Hadad shama b'Mitzrayim. Hadad, while he was in Mitzrayim, heard ki shochav David in avoysav, that David had slept with his fathers. In other words, he passed away. The chimeis Yoav saratova, and that Yoav the general was dead. And at that point, Hadad says to Pari, I want to go back to my country and start rebuilding it. And eventually, towards the end of Shlomo's reign, he started causing trouble over there. So, what's the expression that he's saying? That he says that David lay with his fathers and Yoav died. Mipnei ma b'David never b'shivo v'Yoav never b'misa. Why is it by David it uses the expression that he lay with his fathers, and by Yoav it uses the expression that he died? Now,
why the difference in terminology?
Now, obviously, the Gemara could have answered, and the Medrash actually says as much, but there's a lot of differences. David is a king and Yoav is not. David died a natural death and Yoav didn't. But there's a different reason the Gemara is going to say. David, who left behind a son, Nemer Bar-Shiva. Therefore, it only says he lay with his fathers, like he's not really dead. I'll dead off like Mazar Bechayim Apu Bechayim. Yoav Shleim, never by Misa. Yoav, who didn't leave behind a son, is called that he's really dead. So that's the connection with our previous Gemara. Okay, the question is, the Yoav Shleim Yachdein. What do you mean, Yoav didn't leave behind? What do you mean, Yoav didn't leave behind a son? But you have a pasuk much later in Ezra, hundreds of years later, Mnei Yoav Ovadia ben Yechiel, from the sons of Yoav who came to Israel together with Ezra, is Ovadia ben Yechiel. So we see that Yoav had to say. Ella, no, we have to change it a little bit. David Shinech Ben Kemoisai, David who left a son who was like him, who succeeded him as king, who was tzaddik like him, etc. Nemra Bushiva, so it only says by him that he lay with his fathers, because again, he's not truly dead. Yoav Shinech Ben Kemoisai, Yoav wouldn't leave behind a son. So not so much Talmud, but that's mainly Yoshai, really, that he has a son who's able to Yarish in his position. Yeah, okay. So therefore by him, Nemra by Misa. Okay, that's Jerusha number one. Another one, Jerusha Pinchas Ben Choma. Poverty in a person's house is a worse thing. No, but cash means poverty. Poverty in a person's house is worse than 50 makas. Now, what do we mean by within a person's house? Marshall says the point is, even if a person has what to eat, because he has people who are supporting him or whatever, but within his own house, he's poor, that's a terrible thing. The point of it is, that Rashbam says, realizing that it's worse than 50 makos, a person has to daven for Rachmanos, to not have that happen, to be fair. That person has doesn't have money, I guess. I don't know. Well, what do you mean? What do you call it? Yeah, I guess. Yeah. And in fact, some of them of course say that's why we say the Tzoyich Beisot, because we mean, I think the Ein Elyo and Ein Yaakov says it. That's it means that his children Pashat are asking for food and clothing and whatnot, and he doesn't want to provide for them. That's worse than 50 makas. Shenema, as we find that Eov complains to his friends in one of his speeches, he says, Chonuni, Chonuni atem rei, have rachmanos on me, you who are my friends, ki yad olekan nogabi, because the hand of Hashem has touched me, and the hand of Hashem means 50 makas, like we say in Agada, kamaloko be'etze makas, and a hand is 50 makas. So he says that he was struck by the hand of Hashem, which struck him with 50 makas. But the basic command is commission, okay? But Ka'amri Lechavre, and later on, in Sefer Iyyar, his friends tell him, later on, Elihu tells him, he shomer, be careful, al tefen al oven, don't turn to wickedness, meaning don't second guess the Eivishter, don't have thoughts of rishus that the Eivishter is treating you unfairly. Ki al zeh b'char kemei oni, because you're better off choosing this than being poor. Meaning the Eivishter still all of these troubles that you're having, the sicknesses and the diseases and that his own children that seemingly died, we learned actually earlier in the Sefer, maybe they were just hidden away, whatever, and that he lost all his cattle and everything. No, it's because the Rashbam says you still have gold, you still have silver, you still have land. So you're not completely poor. So you're still better off with all these tsaros that you're having. You're still better off than being really poor. Yeah. So therefore we see that being poor would be worse than 50 makas. Because Eeyah is complaining that I was struck by 50 makas, and Elihu was telling him you're still better off than if you had been poor. Tosfos, by the way, asks the question that, you know, at the beginning of the story, after Eeyah loses all his animals and everything, he has a pasuk, Orim yatzasi mibetnei imi, I came out naked from my mother's womb, but Orim oshuv shama, and when I die, I'm also going to be naked, I'm not taking any of my wealth with me. It sounds like he lost everything. So no, Tosfos says, doesn't mean he lost everything. He just means, okay, whatever I lost, it's still, you know, it's still first. I realize I'm not going to be taking it with me anyway. But he still, at that point, did have other riches. He still did have, like Rashbam says, gold and silver and land and whatever.
Later, all his fortune.
He didn't lose all his fortune. That's the point. He lost livestock.
Except some of it.
Substantial part of it he still has. Also, Tosva says, at the end of the story of Eeyah, it says over there that his friends all came to be Menachem, and each one gave him, they each gave him a ksita, which is a small coin, and nezem zahav echad, and a golden ring. So Lechora isn't that in order to rebuild his fortune. To be Menachem Avolim for all the disasters that happened to him. So they gave him presents. So Lechora, doesn't that mean they're trying to rebuild his fortune? No, Tosfos says they were giving him presents to make him feel better, but not that he needed it. He Taka wasn't poor, as our Gemara is saying. Okay. All right. Drasha number 3. Donosha Pinchas ben Asparchama. Kol sheyesh lechol of the safe space. Say, anybody who has a sick person in his house, yelech eto chacham v'yivakash al avrachim. That person should go to a chacham to daven for him. This is the source for the concept of going to tzaddik for a bracha. Yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Chamas melech malachei mavet, the anger of the king, meaning the Eivishter, causes the person malachei mavet, causes the malachim of death coming around, the person is dangerously sick. The ish chacham. What? Chamas melech malachei mavet?
No.
The yerech chacham? I don't think so, but I don't know.
Okay.
The ish chacham yichaprana, but a wise person, meaning a chamas chacham, will clean it up and help it and help take care of the situation. So this is where we get the concept of going to a tzaddik to daven for on behalf of a person. Interesting thing, by the way, interesting thing that once happened on this in Jewish history, 170 years ago, is there was one time there was in a certain town there was a person, he was sick, his wife was sick, whatever it was exactly, and these people were chassidim of the Tzar Shalom, the first Belzer Rebbe, and they decided, you know what, we got to ask the tzaddik for a bracha, but it's Shabbos. They went on Shabbos and sent a telegram to Shabbos. So afterwards, the Shlomo Kluger, one of the Rabbanim of that time, made a whole shturim about it. So they actually got a heter from the local Dayan to do that. And the Shlomo Kluger, one of the great Rabbanim of that time, shturimed about it in his Truvis, Aitochen, that Dayan should be possible. How can you do such a thing? Mela to take a person to a doctor, but not to go to a Rebbe for a bracha. The upshot of it is when the news reached Reb Shalom, he says, I have to daven for the person all the harder so that it doesn't end up as though it's still a Shabbos, and tackle the person recovered. By the way, the Ramah brings, it's on the basis of this Gemara, the concept of making a Mishaberach in Shul. You want to have that the Talmud Chachamim should daven for the person. You assume that a shul of a minion of Jews is going to have a Talmud Chacham among them. So therefore, that's the source for that also.
Yeah, can you come to my minion?
All right. Okay. Now getting back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Zehakwal, the general rule, Kalakodim Menachla, anybody who is ahead in the line of Nachla, Yotze Yurecha Kodimin, and we say his descendants come ahead. That's why we said, for example, that a person leaves behind a son, had a son and a daughter. We said the son's descendants come ahead of the daughter, for example. And we said, even if, yes, Zehakwal Kodim Bechol Yotze Yurecha, and we said that a father comes ahead of all of his descendants. Now, what does that mean? Boy Rami Bachama. Boy Rami Bachama. Aviha Avachiav. Suppose you have a person died childless. You have his father's brother. You have Aviha Avachiav. You have his father's father, his grandfather is still alive, and you have his uncle. Kigoyin Avraham Yishmael ben Ichtei. You have the father's brothers, and you have the father's father. For example, suppose that Esav dies, and he doesn't have any children. Let's say Yaakov didn't exist for the purposes of this. No, okay, come on. The Rashbam says, that's why actually we're mentioning the case, the Rashbam says that's why we're mentioning the case where Esav dies, because we'd rather say Esav dies than Yaakov dies, but still, yeah. For our purposes, Yaakov is out of the picture. So you have the potential heirs of Esav. Okay. The potential heirs of Esav in this case are his grandfather Avraham or his uncle Yishmael. Which one comes first? Amar Rava Toshmat. The Rava says, well, you see, it said in our Mishnah, Av Kodim B'chol Yotze Yurecha. We say that a father comes ahead of all Yotze Yurecha. So therefore, in other words, if you have basically, if it's going to be Yitzchak or Yishmael, and Yitzchak's already dead, then it's going to be Avraham first. Ahead of, it's going to be Avraham would come ahead of Yishmael, who was his son. Again, just like we said, Ayin Olav, you have to look down each branch of the tree and see if there's any descendants. Each time we say you start at the top of that branch and start going down. So in this case, you start at the top, you start at Avraham, and work your way down. Avraham is going to come before Yishmael. Okay. Yes. So the point, in other words, is that the point is like this. Esav is dead. Since he has no children and no brothers, his next Yodah should be his father. And from his father, Yitzchak already being dead at this point also, it's going to go to his father. Because the father goes ahead of the brother. Yeah. Right. And therefore, so that answers
now
the question.
We're talking about the grandfather.
Yes. But that's, in other words, because you say it goes to Yitzchak, and then through Mishmush from Yitzchak, it goes, now you have to see who's next closer to Yitzchak. And that would be, and that's not going to be his brother Yishmael, that's going to be his father, Avraham. Only if Avraham is dead, is it going to go to Yishmael.
And not Avraham, say Avraham's brother, it would go to his brother?
No. That's what we're saying. It would go to Avraham. Only if Avraham had no brothers and Avraham himself is dead, then you'd go back to Terach, etc.
Go to Avraham's brothers and ask for all the way to go to his father.
Yes, and then it would go down, it would go to Terach. And then, well, that actually gets into the question we talked about before, Mishmush or not. Do the brothers inherit through Mishmush, or do they inherit directly? In fact, from the question over here, is one way of looking at it is Rami Bachama assumes that it's more direct, that's more of a direct thing, not Mishmush. Otherwise, of course, Avraham goes ahead of Yishmael. The other way of looking at it is maybe that's exactly his question. Does a brother inherit through Mishmush, or does he inherit directly? Does he inherit directly from Yitzchak, or indirectly through Avraham? Okay. So anyway, the Rava answers from our Mishnah. Rami Bachama, the Taka, what was Rami Bachama thinking? Why didn't he realize that himself? Because of its sharpness, he didn't look into it. Meaning, the Rashbam explains that really, it means like this. The Rashbam says, it means Rami Bachama is looking ahead to the next question that he's going to ask, which is not so looked at in our mission. He used this as kind of an introduction to it. So when he thought of that question, he was mainly thinking of the next question, and therefore he didn't look to see, is there anything that would answer that first question.
He was setting up, yeah.
According to Rabbeinu Gershom, it means something different. He was reviewing his learning, therefore he reviewed the Mishnah quickly, and he didn't notice the implication of it that you could answer the question. Another question, Boy Rami Bachama. Now what if you have the grandfather versus the brother? For example, again, Esav died. So now you have, unlike in the previous case where there's no Yaakov, and the question is between Avraham and Yishmael, here Yaakov is alive, and the choice, and Avraham is also alive, let's say. So the choice is between Yaakov, his brother, and Avraham, his grandfather. Ezim and Kodim, which one comes first? grandpa? Amar Rava,
Amar
Rava, Toshma, Ha'av Kodim L'chol Yotzei Yerecha. So Rava says, well, we see in our Mishnah, it says the father comes before all the descendants. Yitzchak is dead. Yitzchak is dead now, but so in other words, Yaakov is a descendant of Abraham. So therefore, Abraham goes ahead of Yaakov when it goes to the Nechashim of Esav. Now, Tosfos brings up a point, and so do a bunch of other Mechoshim. In that case, I mean, what do we do with the whole thing that we said before? I mean, according to that, then in that case, the father would also go ahead of the children of the mess, Yaakov's own children, are also the descendants of Abraham, and we say they come first. According to Rava, how would that work? So Tosfos talked about that maybe that din would only apply to Taka if Abraham is dead. Maybe Taka if Abraham is alive, he goes ahead, even though he's the grandfather. He maybe, according to Rava, would go even ahead of the children. Only if he's dead, as is the normal way of things, then it goes to the children. Okay. But Rami Bachama, what would Rami Bachama answer to that? He would say, I don't accept that as a proper explanation of the Mishnah, because Yotzi Yerecha Shaloi, v'lo Yotzi Yerecha Shabanoi. When the Mishnah says that the father comes ahead of Yotzi Yerecha, it means his immediate descendants, not the descendants of his son. In other words, therefore, that Avraham, yes, Avraham is going to come ahead of Yishmael, no question about that, and Avraham is going to come ahead of Yitzchak, but is he also therefore going to come ahead of, of his grandchildren of Yaakov and Esav, let alone descendants further, not necessarily.
Not according to Rabbi
Bachama. Rabbi Bachama argues that maybe not. So he's not sure. And in fact, the Gemara says, so in other words, it would come out therefore that the answer would be in that case Yaakov would come ahead of Abraham. Yaakov would inherit Esav and the Chosim. Abraham would not.
The fathers would inherit directly from the children.
The father inherits from the children, but the Mess's children come first. But then after that comes the Mess's father and then his brothers.
Right.
When we say Ha'av Kodim B'chol Yotzei Yerecha, we only mean one generation away. And for example, once it goes to Yitzchak, it doesn't go from Yitzchak back up to Avraham unless Yitzchak has no other children. It goes first down to Yitzchak's children.
So we basically exhaust that generation before going somewhere else.
Yes.
That's
what Rami Bachama is asking. And Hachinami Mistabra. And in fact, it seems logical to say, well, the answer, yes, that is the din. Hachinami Mistabra, yes. This is one of those, even though Rava is trying to prove it from the Mishnah, nevertheless, though, we understand that it's not like that. Not like Rava understood it to mean that the father comes ahead of all Yotzei Yerecha throughout all the generations, it means only one generation down. Yeah.
So Rabbi Rachman's din is correct.
The premise of his question is the Mishnah says Zakbal Kolak Kodim Benachla Yotzi Yerecha Kodim. Anybody who's closer up in the Nachla, then his descendants come first. Now the Ili Isi the Yitzchak Kodim. Now if Yitzchak was still alive, there's no question Yitzchak would come first ahead of Yaakov. Hashtanami, the lesser Yitzchak. So now also that Yitzchak is not around, Yaakov Kodim. By the same logic,
right.
Yaakov comes first, because it goes down from Yitzchak, because Yotzi Yerecha Kodim, his own, Yitzchak himself, Yotzi Yerecha, come ahead of his father Avraham. So therefore, that's how it is. Shami know that food.
So we covered the vertical lineage, now we cover the horizontal lineage.
Yeah. So the Rashbam,
the generation of the men has to be covered before it goes to an upper generation.
Pretty much. So the Rashbam gives a worked out example like this. We talked about an example yesterday. Here he gives a more worked out example. So again, Reuven had four sons in the Torah: Chanoch, Palu, Chester, and Pan. Reuven dies; his sons inherit it. If one of the sons is dead, then you check and see if he has any living descendants. Does Chester have any descendants? Does Palu, etc. If Reuven has no sons, then and no descendants of sons, then daughters, then Reuven's daughters inherit. Reuven has no daughters and no granddaughters, etc. Then it goes to Yaakov,
the brother.
It goes to Yaakov, his father. Yaakov is gone. Then you give it to Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. If all of them are dead, then you look to see do they have any children. Does Shimon have any children? Does Levi have any children, etc. Nothing. Then do they have any daughters? Or any descendants of their daughters. Nothing of that. So nothing of that. Does Reuben have any sisters from his father's side? No, nothing doing. Then you go back to Yitzchak. Yitzchak, so Yitzchak is, if Yitzchak is dead, then you give it to Esau. If Esav is dead, does he have any children? He has Eliphaz, Teman, etc., all of his descendants over there. No sons, daughters. No sons, no daughters of Esav. Then you go back up to Avraham. Avraham's still alive, he'll get it. Avraham's dead, Yishmael. Is Yishmael dead? See if any of Yishmael's children or grandchildren or what have you are alive. Nothing, you go back to Terach and keep on going like that all the way back to Adam. That's Mishmash. That's exactly what Mishmash is. Yeah.
It's like the umbrella theory.
The umbrella theory? Okay.
I just made it up now.
Right. So, first to the father and then to the brother.
Yeah.
Triple layer umbrella.
So, always you start going down the children. But if not, then you go to the father and from him to the brothers and from the brothers to the other collateral branches. And you keep on going node by node like that until you find some branch, some collateral branch that
happens. Brother.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, as well, to the Yerecha of the father. Yeah.
That's the brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's the father.
You go to his father and then you go to the father's Yerecha. Okay. So that's what it is. Okay.